Hello and welcome to the A-Level Politics Show. So glad you can join me. Today we will focus upon manifestos, which are documents released by political parties outlining their programme for government during a general election campaign. They typically set out the overall direction of the party and contain a number of policies that the party would hope to enact should it form the government by winning enough seats in the House of Commons. Today, I'm going to pay close attention to two things. One, the impact of manifestos upon the outcome of general elections, i.e., do they affect how people vote? And two, their impact when it comes to governing. The full title of the question is this: evaluate the view that party manifestos are the most significant factor when it comes to determining how people vote and how parties govern. A few tips. Notice the word most in the question. These sorts of questions are creeping into the exam papers. They require you to compare the significance of one factor, in this case manifestos, with other explanations, in this case of determining what makes a person vote and what influences how the winning party governs. My direction will be that manifestos are neither the most significant factor in influencing government policy or determining how people vote. So I will be disagreeing with the statement. You don't have to, of course. Notice, I suppose it goes without saying, but I'm going to say it anyway. Notice how there's two parts to this question: influencing how people vote and influencing government policy. So you must also cover both for the higher levels. The next tip I will give is that most of the time, your paragraphs, your three paragraphs that you write in your main body, should consist of three themes, one per paragraph. When it comes to voting behaviour, though, I think the case study approach can replace themes, and that's what I will do. I will look at the 1983 general election and the subsequent governance of the Conservative government after that landslide victory, the 1997 election, and what influenced that election. Was it manifestos or was it something else? And also what the Blair government did after 1997 and whether that was due to the manifesto pledges. And then finally, the 2019 general election and what came next after that. The danger when writing in case study mode, as I call it, is that it can become a little like a story. So I am going to frequently use words in the question like, this point is relevant because it shows that other factors determine voting behaviour and governance more effectively. I'll explain the key terms as I go along so you can figure out what is going on. Okay then, let's roll. Okay, so 1983 and all that, the Tory landslide with 144 seat majority. Let's focus first on the idea that manifestos actually are the major driver of voting behaviour. Well, some would describe, Gerald Kaufman, a former Labour MP, would describe Labour's manifesto in 1983 as the longest suicide note in history. It wanted to withdraw from the common market, abolish the House of Lords and cancel the Trident nuclear deterrent. So a pretty bold, radical reform agenda. And the Tories, if you contrast Labour with the Conservatives, focused their manifesto instead on defence and employment. I think that this demonstrates a more cautious manifesto will often win out against a radical one, and Labour's one was pretty radical. So you could argue that manifestos did have an impact in the 1983 general election. But my point is that there were other factors far more significant in this election. Valence issues, particularly. Valence is another word for trust. Thatcher benefited from the Falklands factor. She won a war against Argentina and benefited from a surge in national pride and support for her individually or personally. Her personal approval ratings skyrocketed. Labour at the same time were internally divided. So when we talk about valence, we're not just talking about leaders, we're also talking about parties more generally and whether people can trust them. And a divided party often isn't trusted by the electorate. We see Labour also weakened by the creation of the Social Democratic Party, the SDP, which split the progressive vote. We also can look at valence issues and trust from the economic standpoint. Is the government economically competent? And the Tories got credit for an improving economy, despite the fact that the UK suffered a pretty difficult recession in the early 80s, partly brought about by some pretty stringent austerity measures and tax increases. But there's also there are also some long-term factors at play as well, not just the short-term ones of trust. In terms of social factors, we can look to region as a major driver of this election result. Labour won only 2 seats out of 110 in southern England. And we also see the continuation of class realignment, where working class people are less likely to vote for the party most associated with the working class, the Labour Party. So we saw that in 1979 with the C2 skilled manual workers shifting towards the Conservative Party. And they stayed with the Conservative Party largely in 1983. So I think there are a host of other factors, be it long term social factors like region, like class or class realignment, and valence issues that better explain the 1983 general election result as opposed to manifestos being the main determinant. But this question is also about the impact manifestos have on governing, on government policy. So let's focus a little bit on that. So after 1983, the Tory manifesto gave the Tories a huge mandate. A mandate is an authority to govern, to continue with privatisation. It also continued with the right to buy scheme, which came in after the 1979 election and which was contained in the 83 election as well, in the 83 manifesto, sorry. The Conservative manifesto contained measures to restrict further trade union power, allowing it during this second term that was won in 1983 to take on the miners and Arthur Scargill, the miners' leader as well. But I believe there are other explanations that demonstrate governing and government policy is driven far more by other factors than by the manifesto pledges. Thatcher was fortunate in her enemies, so says Neil Kinnock, one of her enemies, the former Labour leader at this time. Arthur Scargill played into her hands by not calling a vote on strike action during the miners' strike, which undermined the legitimacy of the whole thing. No manifesto is necessarily going to get you to win a battle, and an ideological one at that, with your enemies. But poor tactics from the opposition perhaps will. The Conservative majority was so large that things could be passed easily, regardless of whether they were in the manifesto or not. And I think we see that now. Post-2019, where the Conservative government is actually passing things that weren't in their manifesto. For example, the Conservative government is scrapping HS2 or part of it. That wasn't in the 2019 manifesto. But they can do that because they know they have quite a strong majority. Many of the measures introduced in the 1983 manifesto were already in the pipeline anyway. The direction of travel was set: privatisation, small estate, austerity, taking on the miners and so on. You didn't necessarily need it written down in a manifesto to confirm that. The manifesto is largely symbolic of what the Conservatives wanted to do. And I think you will see that in the next section when we look at the Labour Party in 1997 and how it was able to win that election and then govern. Okay, so now let's turn to 1997 and the biggest Tory defeat since 1906. Labour's pledge card, which is a kind of mini manifesto, if you like, a little bite-sized chunk of what was in their manifesto, went out to constituents up and down the country. And that pledge card contained promises to cut class sizes, a windfall levy on privatised utilities to help welfare to work, to introduce a welfare to work scheme for the long-term youth unemployed. It promised no rises in income tax, punishment for persistent offenders too. These relatively popular policies demonstrate that the public may respond well to carefully packaged policies put together in an easily digestible format. However, I would say that this does not mean that the manifesto was the most significant reason why Labour won in 1997. Labour had already laid the groundwork with an emphasis on education, much earlier, before the general election, before the manifesto was released. And Blair's tough on crime, tough on the causes of crime slogan when he was Shadow Home Secretary really resonated. And that resulted in a manifesto that focused on crime. So it's a bit like what came first, the chicken or the egg. In terms of long-term social factors, we can see this class realignment issue emerge again as well, where the C2s, the skilled manual workers who voted Conservative up until this point, well, from 1979 onwards, swung back towards Labour. But also, I think we see valence issues really, really important here. The Tories were blamed for Black Wednesday when interest rates skyrocketed, and also for the various scandals that rocked the party due to issues around governing competency, including Cash for Questions and the Mad Cow disease scandal. The media played a role here as well. The Sun switched support from the Conservatives to the Labour Party with Rupert Murdoch and his newspapers throwing in their lot behind Blair in that famous headline, "The Sun Backs Blair." We have other valence issues too, trust issues around party unity. The Conservative Prime Minister John Major had faced a leadership contest in 1995 and the party was bitterly divided over Europe. And sticking on the issue of party leaders, Blair was seen as charismatic and a dynamic leader, while John Major, the Conservative Prime Minister, was viewed as dull and uninspiring. I think all of these things show that valence issues and other factors are more significant than party manifestos in determining general election outcomes. Looking at the period post 1997, we can perhaps make the argument, I think it's flawed, that the manifesto was a moderating influence on New Labour. But I think that you could also argue that it's important because the spending restraint that the manifesto spoke of resulted perhaps in greater pressure to release the taps, and eventually it led to greater public spending or calls for it. The pledge card on the New Deal was indeed fulfilled, but the most significant economic reform, that is Bank of England independence, was not mentioned at all, I don't think, in the manifesto. So I would argue that the Labour Party was not necessarily influenced too heavily by its manifesto. I think the government instead was shaped by Blair's centrism and his caution. The manifesto was simply an expression of this centrism. So again, I'm playing around with this idea that manifestos are simply symbolic of what the party wants to do rather than necessarily influencing what the party does do in office. Also, the massive majority that the government won and the implosion of the Tories would have affected government policy and what Labour felt it was able to do. The media influenced what Blair did when in office. His wariness about joining the euro, he really wanted to join the euro and promised a referendum on it, but then decided not to hold a referendum on it. That was due to hostility from the Sun newspaper and from Murdoch. Manifestos cannot cover unexpected events either. So the road hauliers strike and the issue of transport and traffic congestion really shot up the political agenda. It was barely an issue during the campaign itself and not mentioned too much in the manifesto. I also think that the type of governance that we see in the Blair era, this top-down governance, largely reflected Blair and Brown's preference for domination of policy from the centre. That's not something a manifesto can influence. That is something that party leaders influence. Therefore, again, I'm arguing that manifestos are not the main driver of voting behaviour, but also not necessarily the main driver of what governments do when in office. And finally, we will come on to 2019 and the 80-seat majority that the Tories won in this election. So let's first look at the Labour manifesto, which some rather impolitely describe as policy incontinence. I won't tell you what incontinence means. You can look it up. But promises for free broadband perhaps symbolised the public perception that Labour weren't serious about the costs of their ambitions. And Labour's numerous policies on nationalisation led to perhaps another 1983 moment where people just simply lost trust, or the manifesto symbolised perhaps that loss of trust that people had in Labour's economic credibility. And these promises on free broadband and the like backfired, unlike their 2017 manifesto that clearly enthused young voters to turn out with promises to scrap tuition fees. So a manifesto can help you, it can hinder you. In 2017, I think that the Labour manifesto helped them. But in 2019, the reverse was the case. When we compare it also with the Tory manifesto that was very clear on getting Brexit done, we can see that perhaps manifestos do matter. This much clearer promise to leave the EU contrasted quite heavily with Labour's wishy-washy approach and a second referendum pledge and so on. Also, the Tory manifesto promised to level up and invest in public service services. And this made perhaps the Tories safe for working class voters who had nearly always voted Labour to perhaps switch their allegiance and see public services invested in. That was the promise anyway, and for Brexit to actually take place, which is what a lot of people in the Red Wall, those working class areas that had formerly voted Labour, voted for. And this affected how they voted in 2019. So I think this shows that, you know, a policy that is unpopular, like in the Labour Party's manifesto, can have a real effect, as the Tories also found out in 2017, when the Tories tried to spell out how it would pay for adult social care, only for this manifesto commitment to be labelled the dementia tax. And arguably that robbed the Tories in 2017 of its majority. So what I'm saying is if a policy falls flat, that can really have an impact. If a policy in the manifesto is very clear and gives a direction of travel, that can also have an impact on voting behaviour. However, I'm going to challenge all of this. The polls barely shifted during the campaign before and after the manifesto launches. Manifestos merely, again, reflect what people knew anyway. Johnson's hard Brexit unified the right as well, and Labour's second referendum pledge split the progressive vote. Manifestos did not create this fact. This fact was already there in the autumn of 2019. In 2019, the Brexit Party's decision not to field candidates against Leave-supporting Conservative MPs helped to consolidate the Leave vote still further. And that proved crucial in marginal constituencies. So it's not the manifesto, it's the tactics of political parties that perhaps affect the outcomes of general elections. Johnson ran a traditional campaign with a number of high-profile media events, including one where he smashed through a wall labelled gridlock, driving a JCB emblazoned with "Get Brexit Done" on the front. So repetitive sloganeering appeared to work. That's all about the campaign, though, not necessarily the manifesto in itself. We also saw very little scrutiny of the Tories' own issue with making the sums add up in its manifesto commitments, these promises for 50,000 nurses and however many police they were promising. These weren't necessarily fully costed, but that didn't necessarily deny them a majority. Indeed, I think valence issues, again, trust issues, had a huge impact in 2019, particularly when we look at party leaders and faith in them. A 2019 survey of former Labour voters found that 43% of respondents cast their vote on the basis of leadership, perhaps highlighting how dislike of Corbyn helped shatter the so-called red wall, these former Labour-held safe seats that were won by the Conservatives that time around. I think opinion polls picked up a particular concern about how Corbyn failed to tackle anti-Semitism in his party. So it's not the manifestos, it's the dislike of Corbyn that is driving this election result. And Labour was bitterly divided by, while the Conservatives belatedly became united by removing the whip from Tory MPs who voted to block a no-deal Brexit. Boris Johnson went into the general election campaign with party candidates who were united by his approach to leaving the EU. We also have the media as well as an influencer of electoral outcomes in 2019, far more so, I think, than manifesto commitments. Social media and its use started to have an effect. In 2019, the Tories targeted voters in a marginal Milton Keynes constituency with anti-Corbyn adverts. The party targeted much of their online efforts on reaching male Facebook voters, elderly male Facebook voters, with videos that sought to portray Corbyn as soft on terror. So again, demonstrating that valence, trust, use of social media perhaps had a bigger impact in 2019 than manifestos and what they were saying or not saying. We can also look into long-term social factors as well. So in 2019, 56% of 18 to 24-year-olds voted Labour, and the party again enjoyed a plurality of support from all age groups under 39, whereas we start to see much greater support for the Tories amongst people over 65. The crossover age in 2019 appeared to be 39, but every 10 years older a person was, the likelihood that they would vote Labour decreased by 8 points. Ethnicity also appears to have had a significant impact on the way people voted. There remains a strong bias for black and minority voters to support Labour. 64% of BAME voters back Labour compared to 20% for the Conservatives. This gap has been constant and stable for the last four general elections. The Tories enjoyed in 2019 a 19-point lead amongst white voters, an increase from the 11% it enjoyed in 2015. This could point to the salient issue of immigration, which perhaps is bound up with Brexit, and that could explain those sorts of statistics. But that is not necessarily anything to do with the manifesto. We also see regional divides, regional voting as well, as another long-term social factor kicking in and driving election outcomes in 2019. So patterns are pretty clear, with Labour the party of the cities, and the Tories appear to be the party of the towns around the cities as well as rural areas. Regional divides appear to play an important role in deciding this election. The Conservatives were able to breach Labour's red wall, winning seats in the north and the Midlands that had been considered safe for generations. The Tories increased their vote share by 6.1% on the 2017 general election in areas that voted strongly to leave the EU in the 2016 referendum. But its vote share actually fell back by 2.9% in strong Remain areas. So I think that brings us to salience. That salience is another word for importance. So the salient issue of Brexit played a massive role, as did tactical voting, with Brexit Party supporters throwing in their lot with Johnson and the Tories in this election. So lots of different reasons as to why this election was won. Valence issues being really important, trust or lack thereof in Corbyn, the salient issue of Brexit, plus those long-term social factors playing a role. And I don't think the manifestos necessarily had such a big impact in 2019, certainly not compared with, say, 2017, where we see well-received Labour policies and less well-received Tory policies in those manifestos that gave a late surge in support for the Labour Party and robbed the Tories of their majority. This sort of thing didn't happen in 2019. Let's move on, though, to the idea of governance. Did the manifesto that the Tories introduced in 2019, did that affect, has that affected policy since? Has that affected the way the government has governed? Well, Brexit did get done. Johnson did start to end austerity, as the manifesto pledged, and to spend more money on public services, even though it was a struggle to keep up with the promises made. Brexit hindered the 50,000 nurses pledge because, well, it turns out you need free movement of people largely to get the workforce you need. Manifesto commitments that are poorly received are hard to introduce as well, hence why the Conservatives still have a problem with having no plan for long-term social care for the elderly, because any time they suggest putting up tax to pay for it, we usually see a fight within the party or bad polling for the government. This is why manifestos work best when they say very little, which again perhaps could hinder their impact, because the 2019 manifesto said very little about how the government would introduce a plan for elderly social care. They got their fingers burnt with the 2017 manifesto that appeared to be too detailed, so they reined in their specific pledges, which perhaps gave them greater flexibility to govern as they saw fit. But at the same time, that would downplay the significance of manifesto commitments, because there weren't that many when it came to elderly social care in 2019. Ultimately, other factors really affected the way Johnson and then Truss and then Sunak governed. The pandemic scuppered manifestos, the manifesto commitments. Emergencies do this. So the Tories broke their promise for a little time anyway of not raising national insurance. They did say that they were going to raise national insurance to pay for elderly social care. Then they U-turned on that. So it's hard to say manifesto commitments are kept if they were broke before then they went back on that breaking of the manifesto commitment, if you like. Going backwards and forwards doesn't necessarily show that manifestos are and their commitments are set in stone, does it? We also have huge political instability over the last few years as a result of scandal and with Partygate. As a result of that, we got Liz Truss, and she shifted the party towards a neoliberal utopian agenda. But that went completely against the manifesto. The manifesto was not a neoliberal utopia, but Liz Truss tried to create one with massive tax cuts. She didn't last very long, and then we get Sunak. But he's moved away from the green policies espoused in the Tory manifesto, breaking the spirit, if not the letter, of that manifesto. Doubts over HS2 and also the country's finances, and probably the likely return to the austerity agenda and ideology, all point towards, a manifesto that was written in 2019 that doesn't seem to have much relevance for how the party is governing now. The government seems to be driven far more by the 2024 general election, and the electoral considerations are clearly taking priority over whatever the manifesto said in 2019. And I think we probably see that quite often with manifestos. They become less relevant as the term continues. And certainly when there are emergencies, when there are new leaders, we do often get a change in tack. And that is why I'm arguing that manifestos are not that important either when it comes to winning elections and then governing. That's that then. Manifestos might have some impact, but usually when things go wrong. Parties can be punished when they break manifesto commitments, as the Lib Dems were after they promised not to raise tuition fees, only to relent when in coalition. Yet the size of the majority matters. A hung parliament means that no party has a mandate to govern and to enact their manifesto. Major events throw governments off course too, as we saw with COVID. But backing up for a second, it's hard to say that a manifesto even influences whether a party gets to make these sorts of decisions in the first first place because they don't affect electoral outcomes as some people think they do. Long-term social factors, along with valence issues and salient issues, have been set long before a manifesto comes out. And those sorts of things drive what voters do at the ballot box. Those sorts of things, those sort of electoral calculations, and the different party leaders that might come into office during a parliamentary term will affect government policy thereafter. I hope you found all of this useful, digestible, interesting. If you want to hear more from the A-Level Politics Show, then why not subscribe to receive two bonus podcasts every month in addition to the freebie like this one. Do get in touch. I'm at Nick D'Souza on X and I'm on Threads too. Plus you can leave comments if you subscribe on Spotify. Oh, and feel free to take part in our poll at the end of this show. Until the next time though, take care. Bye-bye.